And welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. You go to the search bar and you type in The Matthew Aaron Show and then you click like. You can find us on iTunes under The Matthew Aaron Show and leave your pithy comments, but no bloviating.
No bloviating, that's our job.
Yeah, and where else? Stitcher. The Matthew Aaron Show is on Stitcher. You could download some of your other favorite podcasts, including ours, and have yourself a whole slew of radio to listen to throughout the day. It's a cool little program. And I also want to thank Taste Chicago, as usual. You can find them at tastechicago.biz on 603 North Hollywood Way. The deep dish pizza is the way to go for me over there. I love the sausage deep dish. You can get a beef. You can get the only Maxwell Street I can think of.
Right.
Chicago-style dog. Get the laddie.
Get the laddie.
Get the laddie. I won't have the laddie. It's got mayo on it or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
That fucking laddie.
I don't do mayo. I don't know about you.
You think that's named after our laddie?
Oh, I doubt it.
Why?
Maybe
it's
it
all
is.
Family.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe it is.
Why doesn't Ronnie have a special over there? There's no like Ronnie's crazy hot wings.
Right, but
Ronnie's ribs.
Yeah, but it would be some goofy thing. Like it would be a gag item.
Right, it sure would.
Yeah, it would be like salmon and peanut butter.
It'd be just like Ronnie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, a gag item.
Yeah, right.
So Taste Chicago, thank you for thank you as always for supporting us.
Yes, thank you.
And let's see here. We will be continuing to do shows from there and welcome people to join our live broadcast. You can follow our website to check that schedule. I will be stopping in there this weekend as well. We got the Hawks game on Saturday.
Hey.
Hawks Kings.
All right.
Friday, I'm going to go over there and I think have some grub, have some lunch.
Okay.
But I do want to thank Josephine and everyone at Taste Chicago. Joe Montagna, thank you. And we look forward to continuing working from Taste Chicago. Lee,
hey,
you have a plug.
I'm going to try this like a real radio announcement.
All right.
Right. And this is a real thing. You can go to the website. If you're in need of the perfect gift, saynotomugs.com has just what you need for hilarious coffee mugs with filthy, ridiculous slogans on them. Guaranteed to liven up any situation at home or work. With slogans like Merry Christmas, asshole, and I'm a miserable sack of shit. These hilarious and highly affordable mugs are all microwave and dishwasher safe, so go to saynotomugs.com for the order. That's saynotomugs.com.
Okay, and by the way, our guest today is Marlon Wayans.
So wait, at what point in the show are we going to have to redo everything?
We're good.
Yes!
We're good.
Awesome.
So far, so good.
I'm liking it. Marlon Wayans.
Marlon Wayans will be joining us today. I interviewed Marlon a few days ago from the Soho House. We did about 50 minutes. It's, I think, a must-listen-to interview, and I don't think I've ever said this before, but I think Ben Lyons said it best. Ben Lyons said, Marlon got out there like a movie star for this movie. Everywhere you turned, he was promoting this thing, Haunted House, which is in theaters now, and Marlon did. It's very rare you see a guy who is as big of a star as Marlon Wayans, and, you know, he's out there, man. He will, if you have a show in your car with a tape recorder, Marlon will show up with Steve, and they'll do a little interview for you.
That's nice.
So that's how we got him.
Yeah.
I told him it's either in the car or at Soho House. Which one do you want to do, Marlon? And he went with Soho House.
Oh.
But once again, I will be at Taste Chicago this week, and I want everyone to know.
you can meet
you can
live
meet
in person.
The Matthew Aaron.
Yeah.
Don't bother me. You can come by and look at me or
something.
Don't
look at me.
Though. You know, you can look at me. I'm not going to say don't look at my eyes or whatever the actors say on the set. But
we're like, hi, how you doing? Yeah, okay, sure. Oh, it's nice to meet you. Don't fucking look at me.
But it is the Chicago Joint in Burbank, 603 North Hollywood Way. I don't know what I'm pretty sure I'm going to get the deep dish, the sausage pie. They got the mini deep dish. It's 7 inches. It really doesn't ruin your diet.
Have you tried the ribs?
Not yet. I said that to you, I think, last week. I go, they got ribs. I never tried them.
I know.
Have you tried them?
No, I haven't. If they're good, there's no place to get ribs.
No.
Californians don't, I think, I don't think Los Angelinos know what ribs are.
No. No, I don't think so either. I mean, they got some barbecue joints out here, but I'm
afraid of them.
Well,
there's a place I've been meaning to take you to called the Bear Pit, which is like an old-time place.
And you like it?
No, I've never been there.
Oh, okay. Well,
looks interesting.
We'll review it.
Looks good, yeah.
We'll get on that.
We'll have our review of it.
Well, maybe we'll take the whole crew from the pilot there next week and do a big shindig at the brisket house.
Okay.
The bear house, eh?
The Bear Pit.
The Bear Pit.
Yeah.
Oh, the Bear Pit. Well, I also need to try the ribs at Taste Chicago.
Okay, we're trying those ribs.
We're going to try all the ribs in town. We're going to hit up every rib joint in town. In honor of Marlon Wayans being on the show, I'm going to hit up every rib joint in town. by the way, I'll talk about a haunted house with Marlon, but I mean, yeah, there's some really great racy comedy in it. I'll say that.
Okay.
You know, it's
I'm a little jealous. I was not there for this interview.
Yeah, it was very you had work, and it was very like
I was doing something
confidential.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like tight knit. It's a Soho house. I guess you need to like really get someone has to give you a guest pass or something. It's like a country club without the golf.
Okay.
Hollywood said fuck golf. We need our own country club. No golf, though. Just a bunch of writers sitting on their computers pretending to work. A bunch of producers walking around buying each other meals.
But no golf. Golf is like a Hollywood thing, man.
No, it's
golf
a place where
Hollywood.
Lenny Cannata hangs out and gives out his resume and then says, I was at the Soho House today. And it's the place where Jon Favreau claims he created the podcast, I'm sure.
Okay.
He walks around telling everyone he created podcasting everywhere.
Okay.
Let's see. Chili's is my country club.
Yeah.
That's my golf course, Chili's. But Soho House is nice, too. I probably spend less at Chili's a year than I would at Soho House. It's
$2,500. Cumulatively, even?
Well, it's $2,500 for the membership at Soho House.
Okay.
And then you got to pay for everything once you're inside. So, like,
you
get a
really
bottle of unsweetened tea here, it's probably like $7.50.
Yeah,
$7.50.
Right.
Woody Harrelson can afford it. I saw Woody there. Woody Harrelson was there.
Okay.
Jessica Chastain was there. Off her win for the Who the Fuck Care Globes. And by the way, she was dressed like she was going to a funeral.
Yeah?
Girl needs a little style.
Cool.
No, not really.
I like that, though.
Yeah, you would. You would.
I like if someone's dressed like an individual.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't I don't give a fuck dress. It was like dressy dress funeral.
Oh.
Like $5,000 black dress.
Is she a little precious?
I don't know. Couldn't tell. I didn't really talk to her or anything. She kind of scared me a little.
Okay.
It's that redhead.
Yeah.
You know, it's the fire color redhead that kind of scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Women, in general.
Those are the most tempestuous ones.
I read an article today. And I got some heat from women on this because I made a comment.
No.
Well, listen. I think I'm pretty fair when it comes to women. I give them their due.
You're fair like Tony Curtis is fair to women. But go on.
Listen, there was this article that came out talking about there was a study done that says the key to a long-lasting relationship is non-sexual touching. So, like, men should be holding women's hands everywhere and you know, without there being any sex.
Yeah.
Non-sexual touching. Now, we know women like sex, but they don't love it as much as men. And we know what happens when you end up being with a woman. You get it a lot less than you assumed you were going to get it.
Yeah.
So, once again, I feel like this study is another way of women owning men again. There was a change with all these women are talking about equal rights and stuff. There was this change in like the last 30 years where they're still talking about equal rights, but they own us. Men are whipped nowadays.
Yes.
They're whipped. Every relationship, whipped.
No, guys that aren't even in relationships.
Right,
are
whipped.
Psychologically. I beg to differ.
And this
you know
is another
why?
Whipping.
No, you know, whipping is that.
Non-sexual
you know
touching.
Why? We're decent people.
Okay.
We treat most women will not treat women.
No, that's true. And
like
I'm saying
shit.
I think women are now treating us like shit.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be men equal rights. Long-lasting touching, like non-sexual touching. You know who put that out there?
I remember.
Those feminists.
Yeah, I remember when you were out with this girl and you came home with a shiner. You should have listened, Matt. You should have listened.
That's why I tried some pro-sexual touching, and I came home with a shiner, right.
All right. I'm not opposed to non-sexual touching. As long as sexual touching is still on the table.
I agree. But when you say non-sexual touching is the key ingredient to a long-lasting relationship,
right,
that might as well just be saying women whipping your ass is the ingredient to a long-lasting relationship. Which, by the way, duh.
It's definitely seems like cuddle blackmail.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It is.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
And by the way, sending that out on Jezebel.com, where tons of women read Jezebel.com, where women are going to be like, yeah, it is the key, is empowering women to be like, yeah, we're not fucking. You got to hold my hand, though, everywhere we go. If I'm at Ace Hardware, the last thing I want to do in front of Tony behind the counter getting me my supplies is holding my woman's hand at the front counter.
You know what?
And some old man walks by, and some old man goes, you know, keep it to yourselves, or public affection.
Well, no, public displays of affection, I don't know. You know what it is? It's like if your girlfriend's like making dinner or something, like you go up from behind and you just like put your arms around her at the waist. Like things like that. You know what I mean? Little things.
You're kind of a homo.
Yeah, okay.
No offense.
You got to touch that girl, all right? She'll thank you for it. It's good. It's a good. Geez. It's like, yeah, but
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
No,
I'm not
no.
saying it's bad.
It's
but
not.
You're missing the point of the article.
I'm not saying
long-lasting relationship.
The key ingredient,
predicated off of that.
Right.
It's horseshit.
Yeah, it kind of is horseshit.
Don't lead it credence. Don't give it credence
John
Fogerty over there with your credence.
Oh, come on.
You're giving it too much.
No, it's
no one's saying
it's
not
the
to
key,
do it.
Yeah, right. But it's not the key ingredient. I see what you mean.
But I'm just saying it's one of those, and I read Jezebel, but it's one of those feminist sites, which I'm cool with, and I read it.
That's
all the
feminist? But wait, how is that feminism? Trying to get guys to do
article
that.
Is it's not trying to get guys, because who reads it? Women. I'm one of the few men that go to Jezebel.com.
Yeah.
Women
we'll
read
talk
that.
About that another time.
That's telling women.
I'm the homo.
No. Oh, no. We've talked about this on the show.
Uh-huh.
My key to success in my mind is getting into the mind of the woman.
Yes.
So I read female love advice.
Right.
I read it because I want to know what they're telling
women. I
want to
know what women are thinking.
And this is another thing I'm talking about where it's complete horseshit.
Yeah.
Complete horseshit. It is telling women, if your man's not holding your hand at Ace Hardware, dump him. Or don't give him any sex. That's not it. That's not helping anybody.
Do women still do what magazine articles tell them?
Yep.
Like many of them?
Yep.
I know some of them will always do.
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Like 10 ways to get your guy to...
And you know what
women
still
do
love? Not only the 10 ways, but women still love the quizzes. The surveys they do.
Yeah.
They love them. I know women who sit down with a pad of paper and write down their answers and then go back and check the key.
Who does that?
Tons of women.
Your sisters do it?
No. When I was in the airport coming back, I sat next to two women. On one side of me, one's reading Vogue. On the other side of me, one's reading 17. The age of the woman reading 17 next to me had to be 35 years old. I mean, it's ridiculous. Okay, but enough about that. I've plugged that article enough as being horse manure.
Yeah, it is.
Went to an audition today.
Uh-huh.
Can't talk too much about the specifics, but I will give you... I did want to give people, before Marlon comes on, a professional actor, someone much better than I. Someone Darren Aronofsky would cast, unlike me. I wanted to give people a little inside look into the auditioning process. And I know I've done this in little bits and pieces before, but it's a great project, by the way. I get sent this project yesterday. I read the script. It's phenomenal. It's a really good project. It's based on a book I love. It's a really cool role. It's perfect for a guy like me because it's a supporting role. You don't have to carry anything, and I don't want to. I don't want to be that guy anyways. I don't want to be the guy on a poster who has to carry the fucking thing. I got to do that with this fucking pilot. And we're casting.
It's your project, buddy. You don't have to.
No, I
got to carry this whole pilot.
I do. Which I don't like doing that. So, just like I got to carry this show. Listen.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm just playing.
So
I go to this audition.
It's a good thing we don't have any furniture because your head is taking up enough space in this room.
Right. So I told you this. They asked me for my headshot.
Yeah.
And I turned to the girl, And first I go there. Okay, I'll start at the beginning because it's kind of creepy. Okay, so I go there, and I know I'm up against people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I park my car across the street from the entrance, and I sit in the back seat, and I'm kind of spying on everyone going in to see who my competition is.
Uh-huh. A little creepy. You can't be the only person doing that.
A little creepy. I was the only one today. Well, Giamatti drove by, and he's like, "You're in my spot." But here nor there. So I'm staring at all these people, and I'm like, "I got this guy. Who the fuck's he? It's not a good look. I got him." And I'm just judging people from my car, like making myself feel better.
Like an actor.
Yeah. And so I got my lines on and everything. So first, spying on people. Probably breaking some etiquette there. Then I go inside, and I'm sitting down, and I'm sitting on this couch, and I know all my lines, and I'm the kind of actor that feels like you don't want to sit on the couch 10 minutes before your thing and read all your lines, because I think it puts stress on you.
Right.
So I like to get in a zen mode when I'm on the couch.
Right.
I try to think about nothing, nothing. And then I let the lines come to me naturally, like they're real. They're like I'm creating the lines in my head.
Right. I don't look at my material right before I go on.
Never do that. Yeah. Never do that. It's the worst, because then you're just thinking about that material you looked at.
Right.
And you're overthinking. You're overthinking. You should be so prepared going into an audition that you can just walk in the door, do it, and walk out. So you got to sit there, like, I was there a half hour probably, and but there were just two broads next to me yapping the whole time, so I really only got like 10 minutes of Buddhism time.
Just tell him non-sexual touching.
Yeah, right, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, all right.
And they were talking about how amazing South Africa is.
Okay.
Okay, whatever, here nor there. So I didn't read the lines. I'm doing this Buddhist thing, and this girl walks over, sweetest girl ever, and she goes, "Can I have your headshot?" And because I have no filter, and I didn't have an answer for this, and I'm not going to go pay $1,000 to go get headshots done for this one role, I say, "I don't do headshots." In front of like five other actors, by the way. And this girl just stares at me and she goes, okay. And just turns around like she's never heard it before in her life.
She hasn't.
Never heard it. Like an actor walked in here and says, "I don't do that."
But see, you claim that you didn't have any snark or pretension when you're doing
no,
it.
No, I didn't.
You didn't say, "I don't have headshots." You said, "I don't do headshots."
Yeah, I don't. Well, I meant to say
all
I
right.
don't have a more.
The word do.
Yeah, but I don't have them makes
shot.
It seem like I'm not a professional. So I rather look like the dickhead professional than the dickhead non-professional who's like, "I don't have headshots." That's how a guy says, "I don't have headshots."
That's how Pat Tobias says it.
Right. That's how Pat Tobias walks
Tell
into an audition and goes, "I don't have headshots." Me, I go, "I don't do headshots." And then they're like, "All right, you better back it up, cocksucker." So I go in there, and it's with someone I consider a friend, a wonderful woman, and it went well. But my advice to actors is, it's a fucking cattle call. As usual, you got to sit there with like five other people, wait your turn in line. They get you in and out. It's like making sausages. And the best advice I can give is just be prepared way ahead of time, because they only gave me a day for this. You know, you get the email at 3 p.m. You got to know four pages of dialogue in one day by tomorrow morning at 11. So be as prepared as possible. Walk in there with some confidence. Clear your mind. And this is something I do. I don't know if you do this.
Did you wear your powder blue tracksuit and cowboy boots?
No, I wore my dues paid shirt.
Okay.
Nike shoes and sunglasses. Which, by the way, now makes that even seem worse that I said I don't do headshots. I'm now looking at myself going, "Yep, I look like a cocksucker." So... Oh. I'm the only one with sunglasses.
This is some
in there.
Advanced audition technique. You got to mention it, because
the Michael
people
Kane.
Are going to eat this up. Yeah,
I don't do three to four takes.
Right.
So yeah, my advice though is, I don't know how, because it's different than stand up. When you and I do stand up, you know how to deliver a line. You plan out the delivery.
Right.
For acting, I feel like you don't want to do that. Because I feel like the best way to deliver dialogue as an actor is to make it sound like it's improv, like it wasn't written to begin with. Like it's so good that it just came out naturally.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like it's reality. They're filming a real person having this conversation with another real person. You're not acting, you're being.
But someone would say, well, not everything is written that way.
I understand that, and that's when you get direction from directors. But I feel like when you go in for a read, they're looking for your look, and they're looking to see how you... Yes, delivery, but they're not looking for you to be Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they want you to be Jack Nicholson, because while we consider Jack Nicholson to be a great actor at this and that and whatever, or any actor, like Pacino, De Niro, and we go, wow, he was really good in that. In casting sessions, they would consider most of that acting that they're doing overacting.
Right.
So you can't get away with that. You can't walk in there and act like De Niro in Silver Linings or Nicholson in Batman, or because they'll be like, he's overacting. When you're on the set and that's what the director wants and the final thing's cut and everyone's entertained, they go, that's some great acting. In a casting room, Pacino going, hoo-ha, overacting. Isn't that weird? But it's true.
Yeah.
They'll tell you that, too.
Well, I mean, if everybody... in everything, just acted like Pacino and De Niro and Nicholson. Acting movies would be very weird.
I'll give you an example. They don't want you to be loud in an audition. They don't want you to deliver. They don't want you to deliver dialogue
in
loudly.
General or in this one.
No, in pretty much unless it is specifically written, be fucking loud. They don't want you to be loud. They want you to talk it. They want you to deliver it like you're having a conversation. And so if De Niro walked into a room and did some of his dialogue from Silver Linings, and he wasn't named De Niro, and they were casting that role just as some unknown, they'd be like, man, this guy overacts. It's weird. It's weird. Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
It's odd. And it's totally different than doing stand-up. So that's why you totally have to get out of stand-up mode when you're in there. Like Sharon even said to me today, she goes, now don't, I know, I don't want to reveal too much, but she's like, don't be Radio Matt. She's like, don't, but I understand why you have to do that. And that's how it's done in real life. But we don't want that.
Right.
And you sit there and you're like, yeah, I kind of figured that. But I'm like, yeah, don't be Radio Matt. And it's, you got to keep stepping away from what you're used to. It's weird. It's crazy. So, you know, that's pretty much all I got to share about acting. And I know you're getting ready for audition processing, too. And
Yeah.
It's hard because everyone wants something different, man.
It is. Yeah, they are. And it's never – obviously, everyone knows it never goes the way you think it's going to go.
No.
Sometimes it goes better. Sometimes it goes worse. But it's pretty brutal. It's a pretty brutal process if anyone's ever done it.
Before I get to the interview with Marlon – and by the way, so stand-up. But it's a different bird.
Right.
The process and doing it is a totally...
It is, except it's the same thing where you're playing a character.
Sure.
But I'm very loud on stage. I'm very loud
Most
and I'm very energetic.
I would say there's more comedians that are loud than soft. And so this is something where I think with auditioning, most actors are soft, not loud. It's totally different. It's weird.
Right.
It's weird. Like Seinfeld could not be Seinfeld if he was auditioning for something.
No.
It's crazy, but it's true.
No, but that's also because he has no range. Anyway,
no, right.
Right.
By the way, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, when we come back from our interview with Marlon, we're going to talk about the story going on at Notre Dame because it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I do want to congratulate and send our regards to our director of photography for the pilot, Pat Wimp. Another burden off my shoulder here. His wife delivered her baby today. So
really?
I have no worries whatsoever.
So for this story, if you're not aware, if we haven't said it, the day we're set to film our pilot was the projected delivery day for our director.
In Chicago,
we're
in L.A.
And we were like, under our breath, you're like, well, that really fucks everything up. God damn it. You know, but
some of us were under our breath. Some of it said it right to him.
Yeah, right. But that's great.
I won't share who.
Thank God for nature and life and blah, blah, blah. And that means...
And by the way, just so my ego can grow some more, I'm just going to assume they forced the baby out
right.
early for my well-being. And thank you for that. Thank you for considering me.
They took a giant comedy mallet and whacked her in the stomach, and out it popped.
Boing! Yeah, right.
And healthy, 7 pounds, 5 ounces.
That's great. All right, here is my interview with Marlon Wayans. A Haunted House is in theaters now. What a better way to spend your Martin Luther King Jr. weekend than going to see A Haunted House, which will be its second weekend. His first weekend raked in over $20 million, came in number two at the box office.
Honor Dr. King.
Yep.
By seeing this movie.
I agree. I think Dr. King would enjoy this piece. Thank you to Marlon Wayans. He was nothing but a complete gentleman, as you will hear in this interview. Funny and definitely gives up more than a regular interview does. He's very honest. He's another guy with no filter. So this is a very entertaining interview, and I hope you enjoy it, and we will be back right afterwards to talk about Notre Dame. All right, I'm Matthew Ware, and I am here with the Marlon Wayans.
What's happening?
A Haunted House in theaters now.
Yes.
Big hit.
It's cool. I'll be able to pay rent for the next couple of months. I can keep my kids in private school because we were starting to look at public schools, and my daughter was a little scared.
I'm going to tell you something, man. I saw it yesterday.
The sun is like beaming in my face.
I figured.
Like,
hold on. I'll block you with my body here.
That did offer some shade. Actually, can we just pull this down?
Oh, can we pull it down? I don't know. I don't know how the Soho House works.
I don't be weird and awkward and have to turn my back and do the interview. Would this be weird? Is this weird?
No, I saw a lot of your back in the movie yesterday.
It's a nice ass. I just wanted to show it to the world.
You had no problem with that, but you haven't before.
I never have.
No, you've never been ashamed.
I don't know why, and I should be, because it's such a little, like two little black peas. It's like the littlest ass ever. You know, I wouldn't show probably asshole. Like, I'll show ass.
Yeah, that's good.
Asshole is when it gets weird.
Yeah, it got close. It got close.
It winked at you.
I was sitting next to two gay gentlemen at the movie. By the way, it was packed.
We're all gay dudes.
Packed. Well, usually, you know how fucking Hollywood works. You get, you go see all this shit for free. I didn't go to a screening. I paid.
Oh, good man.
I love Marlon. I love Tom Ortenberg. I love Open Road. I go, I'm going to pay for this shit. I went. It was great. I'm sitting in a packed there, packed. And this is like Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm sitting next to this nice group of Latina girls and these two gay men. And every time you get naked in that movie, or Nick Swartzen's in the movie, oh, they were loving it. They were eating it up. And then the Latina girls, they were loving you too. So you were getting love.
All right. So I may not make any more money, but I'll get laid a lot.
From both
communities. That's the dope shit.
When I said on Twitter and Facebook that I was interviewing you, I had so many women go, he's so hot.
Are you serious?
He's the hottest Wayans.
That's a lie. Sean's so much more fuckable than I am. Like, if I had to pick between fucking me and fucking Sean, it's easily Sean. I mean, he has a chest. He's a goatee. I mean,
He plays the jock in the movies, usually. He plays the jock role.
He does.
And then you get the, like, stoned out motherfucker role.
Here's the thing. I think all the girls can sense I have a big dick. I think they have this spidey sense. Like, you know why I love Marlon? Because he definitely has a big dick. He has big dick confidence.
I got to tell you, that one scene, the sex scene you have with a stuffed animal, that's going to make you go places. You're going to go places with that. And I mean,
I could be a porn director. Like, I could go fuck the Muppets. All the Muppets want me. Like, Miss Piggy emailed me yesterday. Kermit slipped me his number.
That's a ballsy scene, though, man. And I'll tell you why. And I want to know if that was like that in the script, because it goes on for a little period of time. And at first you're like, it's like that old joke where, like, it's really funny.
Yeah.
Then it stops being funny.
Yeah.
But then because you keep doing it, it's funny again. So I was like, is that how it was supposed to be in the script, where it was going to go on a while? Or did you just do so many takes that you're like, we got to keep them all?
I did so many takes that we have to keep. Here's the thing. It wasn't even written.
Yeah.
Like, all I was supposed to do was just showcase a couple of moves that I was going to do, like doggy style and like one other move. But there was this stuffed animal that prop department put on the bed. And it was just sitting there, this little innocent little stuffed dog. And it's just looking, I was just sitting there going, I'm going to fuck the shit out of you. And then it just started, like, I started out with the dog and I started banging it and doing all kinds of different crazy shit with it, like like the Superman, the pile driver, the military crawled. Then I started getting naked, and that's when it started getting crazy. And as I started getting naked and humping it, I was like, okay, I need more people. I need more. I whispered to the prop department, give me some more stuffed animals. And so I'm in the middle of doing the thing, and I'm fucking the dog, and then I pull this other little dog up, and I go, oh, you going to bring a friend. And that's when I heard the director, Mike Titus, and Rick fall out of their chair. Like,
I was
literally
on the set. Are people, like, creeped out, or are people, like, dying?
At first they were creeped out, and then they started dying, and then they got creeped out again, and then they started crying.
So it's like the joke. It's funny, then it's like, all right, it's getting creepy. Then it gets funny again.
Because it's just absurd. Like, you're having a menage a trois with two stuffed dogs, and then you're going to bring the duck in and do two dogs, one duck. I did Bukkake with them. It got crazy.
That's on the unrated edition.
It really is. Like, I had a fight with my producing partner, Rick and Mike, and they was like, you can't do Bukkake. I was like, dude, I'm going to do Bukkake. I wanted Bukkake. I was like, I'm going to walk up the movie. If you guys don't put Bukkake in, I'm not gonna do this movie. And so it just went on and on, and it was just, at a point, everybody on the set started saying, oh, do this, do that.
Yeah.
So everybody got in on the joke, but it was a lot of fun.
So you write this movie. Let me ask you, how much of the page is on the screen, and how much did you improv? Because I got a sense that there was a lot of improv going on, especially from your former movies, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'll get to that. But I felt like there was a good bit improv.
There was more improv on this movie, I think, than any movie ever before.
Is it because you felt like you had more control?
Two things. One is, I felt like this genre of picture that he was kind of doing, because it's found footage, and like I said, it's not. I keep telling people it's not a parody.
Right.
It's more of a horror comedy with parody moments. It's
kind it of is. It is.
If they have no black couple, and everybody's like some of the critics is like, it's a parody. It's not a fucking parody. If it was a parody,
it's a satire on relationships.
Exactly.
Which is funny. You can't sell it like that.
Exactly.
But that's what it is. It's a satire on moving in with your girlfriend.
Exactly. And then her bringing a demon.
Right.
Because they always bring one.
Right.
They always got some kind of baggage.
The baggage.
If it's
right.
not a demon, it's herpes. Who knows?
And I got to tell you, that was a pleasant surprise, man. Because I went in thinking, all right, I love Marlon. I grew up, one of my favorite movies ever, and I say this on Facebook all the time to people and Twitter. I go, one of my favorite movies of all time is Don't Be a Menace.
I was about to say, I knew it was Don't Be a Menace.
Don't Be a Menace is the funniest fucking movie. I mean, I love Mo Money. I love Low Down Dirty Shame. I love all your brothers' movies. I love that kind of shit. But Don't Be a Menace is the movie. So
it
I mean,
is the movie for every weedhead. It is a quintessential young weedhead.
Oh, you play
movie.
That in Friday, like back to back. You play that in Friday, and you're set for the night.
Oh, what happens is you play Don't Be a Menace, and then Fridays, and then you fucking sleep.
Right, right, right. So I went into this, and I'm like, all right, I hope it's not going to be a spoof movie, like Epic Movie, and all those other. And those movies aren't that great. It's
yeah,
when
no,
the weigh-ins come to town that it's
they
good.
Suck.
Yeah, they're not good.
They suck.
They're not good.
They suck.
You get offers, by the way, to be in those movies,
never.
To act in them or
never.
Anything?
Never. I wipe my ass with those scripts. Because it's such an offense to what parody is. And like,
yeah.
You know, I'm not saying I'm a genius, but I just go, dude, you can't do it. But just call it a sketch movie and
right.
do that.
I just thought it was really dope. I go see this. I'm sitting there. I was texting Carnahan before it. I go, I'm seeing Marlon's movie, blah, blah, blah. And because him and I are doing a pilot together, and we've been talking
oh,
about
nice.
You. We love you.
Nice.
You're the best. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this, and I go, oh, don't be a parody movie. And then when it was a satire about relationships, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
This is good. This is some good stuff.
Yeah.
So I got to give you total props on
thank
that.
You,
I thought
bro.
It was great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I got you know a lot of great feedback from audience. It's funny because our movies never get great reviews.
No.
The audience. Always
that's
it.
What matters, though, right?
Because
I was talking to Joe because the Oscars, Golden Globes, the Grey didn't get nominated, whatever, got shafted. Grillo got shafted. The best movies are the movies like Don't Be a Menace, Tommy Boy, Dumb and Dumber, movies where you could watch. I'd rather make a movie where some kid's seen it 100 times than see Zero Dark Thirty, which, good movie, you're never going to watch again.
We know the ending.
Right, right.
He gets shot in the face, and then they bury him in the river with fucking
right.
Megatron.
And it's a good movie, but it's 3 hours long, and you're never going to watch it
And there's
yet.
No black guy in it. How the fuck there's no black guy in the fucking president made the goddamn decision? It's a black guy. There's no role. No, I never got a script for Zero Dark Dirty to play Obama. I would have loved to have played Obama.
I like when you do drama. Lady Killers, Requiem.
Lady Killers was a lot
well, that
of
was a little comedy, too. Yeah. But I mean, Requiem, of course, that you get props for that all the time, I'm sure.
But I worked with a great director, man.
Sure.
Darren Aronofsky is the truth, man. And it's like, you know, it's easy to. Here's the thing. When you work with great directors, and it's easy for you to be great in their movies because you all you have to do is go in and do what the hell they tell you. Whereas, and plus drama is easier than comedy because we all got pain.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy is hard because to make everybody laugh at one time, that's a very hard thing to do. It takes a lot of work. Comedy takes a lot of work. You don't just be, but you have to be humble. You have to be stupid. You have to be on your toes. You have to think. It takes a lot of energy to be funny.
I agree.
Like, for real.
I agree. Because I did Second City for years. And when you're up there, you kind of just have to have no ego.
Yeah.
You have to have no ego, no shame.
None.
Like you're talking about, no shame.
None.
And, I mean, you have to do whatever's funny for an audience.
That's why when I got naked, you know how little my dick was in a tub? It got so little. Because that was cold water. It wasn't even hot water. Oh. Couldn't afford the hot water. But and then while you're there, you're going, all right, find me a gasoline tank. Hey, you give
bleach.
Me some bleach. Yeah. And all that shit kind of happens in the moment.
Yeah, right.
And in really, you got to be a fool.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it because I grew up, like I said, I grew up in Living Color. Don't be a mess. So when I was in grade school, I'm 29. So when I was in grade school.
Oh, you're a baby.
Right. I don't look it though. But me and my buddies.
I'm going to say you do look 50, but that's. Right. Is that gray in your beard? I mean,
right. It is. But me and my buddies, we would sit down, and after each in Living Color, we would sit down. We'd write out like sketches.
Are you serious?
And satire
awesome.
Movies, all kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
Because like the Wayans for us, and Naked Gun to an extent.
Yeah, no,
the Abram Brothers.
Naked Gun was great.
Yeah, Airplane.
And Airplane was a
Hot
classic.
Shot.
First movie I ever went to that made me go. I want to do this.
Airplane. Yeah.
Airplane was just so, when she was, the little girl was on the plane, and the nurse was singing to her, and she kept pulling her IV out her arm, and the little girl's cheeks would go in.
Yeah, right.
When she would do this while she's dying, then the brother's talking jive. See, that was a classic movie.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know, lately, it's like, I hate when they take a check. It's like, Zucker's took over a scary movie, and
right.
I feel like. You're taking a check.
No, they did, man.
You're not. I know what you're doing. You're great.
Right.
And what you're doing with this is.
Because Scary Movie 4 and Scary Movie 3, they were not 1 and 2.
No.
They weren't. And they were a different theme. They were a different style. The whole thing was different.
Yeah.
It didn't.
It's like asking Larry Bird to do a Michael Jordan dunk.
Right.
It's just not going to. Right. He could shoot. Let him, you know. Do the 3-point shot. He got that.
Yep.
But he's not going to dunk like Michael Jordan.
No.
And he's going to look really dumb trying to do it.
Right.
You know, but if Jordan trying to sit out and shoot
like
Larry Bird,
yeah. Right.
It's just two different skill sets. So,
no,
you know.
I hear you. And let me ask you, though, we were talking about, you know, you're hot for a few days now because big opening, bro.
Yeah. Huge opening. Beat five major stars, A-plus stars in one movie. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck you.
I like Gosling.
Nah, he's a good dude.
Fuck Brolin. I like Gosling. I like Josh, too. Who can I say fuck you to in that?
Robert
Sean
Patrick.
Penn. Nobody likes fucking Sean Penn.
No.
He's kind of cool, too. Yeah. I did love Milk.
Milk was good.
He was awesome in
Milk. Was good.
He was awesome. I watched his performance in Milk, and I was just sitting there, and I literally cried at how much he committed to that role.
He did.
Like
he
him,
did.
Guys.
They
like,
all did. Emile Hirsch.
So unbelievable.
Emile Hirsch is great in that movie. It's not
great.
A huge role.
Yeah.
He's a great actor, Emile Hirsch. I saw him in Killer Joe this summer on Billy Friedkin's new movie. McConaughey?
Really?
Dude, he's amazing in this movie.
Wait until you see McConaughey in this new movie that he's doing, the Dallas Buyers Club. I hear it's going to be.
That's why I'm here. Well, you've seen the pictures.
Dallas Buyers, I hear he's definitely going to win that one.
That script's been around forever, too.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. So we're talking about how you were hot for 3 days. All right.
Yeah, this is
all
like,
your
you
movies
do a movie
fucking
and,
open, though, man.
When you do a movie and it opens, like, huge weekend.
Yeah.
But you're literally only hot for 3 days.
Right.
Because the next weekend, you're off the shelf and there's some new hot.
So are you taking the new movie before the release? Do you strategize it where you're like, all right, just in case the movie don't do hot, let's take a movie now?
No.
Do you just take whatever's the best script? But in your case, you're creating.
I write, produce, and
you know,
star now my movies. It's like now, like this for me is a business. Like I didn't go to a studio with this. I did this movie. We did this with IM Global for $2 million.
Sure.
The big story is I made this movie for $2 million.
No, just like Hit and Run was $2 million over the summer.
$2 million.
That's the
and
thing.
It made $18 million on the opening week. How much did Hit and Run make in the box office?
not 18.
But
18
still,
divided by 6.
Yeah, but still.
But still, it's going to make its money
it's
back.
It's going to make
absolutely
its money back. And then
it'll make it like
and
16
Road,
or 18.
Open Road did a great job. Open Road.
Ortenberg knows
what he's doing. He's very smart. And Jason Cassidy.
And that AMC and Lowe's hookup they got.
Yeah.
That's key.
Because they keep you in the theaters and they promote you. And they like they did a great job.
Yep.
They gave this the A-plus treatment.
I agree.
I really respect
it. I saw more ads for this, more posters for this than Gangster Squad. And
no,
I live in L.A.
Definitely not.
I saw more ads in the movie theaters.
Really?
If you go to the movie,
yeah.
And I go to AMC,
right?
Haunted House.
What they did was smart. Was
Gangster
they,
Squad had a billboard that went from Santa Monica to Santa Monica, the city. but yeah, it didn't work out so well.
All Santa Monica Boulevard
was
just one big poster. No, but they spent $60-70 million to make the movie,
mm-hmm,
and another 40 to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they had a good
better
weekend.
Better do good overseas,
which it probably will. You know, and hopefully
but this
will.
Kind of comedy does all right overseas because it's broad.
Well, we're in 75% of the country. I mean, the world right now. So UK we haven't gotten yet.
Okay.
UK we're still looking for a distributor. I don't know what's taking so long.
Quartet came out on top this weekend in the UK.
Really?
But the UK is usually what's into these broad comedies.
UK, we have huge numbers in the UK.
I believe
that's
it.
Why I
that's
can't
why I'm
understand
saying they love
why.
Broad comedy.
I think it's because Scary Movie's coming out over there, and so they end up there with
that looks awful.
And,
I got it.
No comment.
They played that preview before Haunted House.
Are you
so
serious?
I'm like, really?
Are you serious?
That
was the response.
But I think it made people not a lot of laughs.
Wow.
And I mean, there were some bad previews that were getting laughs. But I think it was actually funny in a way because people saw that, didn't react, and then they're dying during this movie.
Yeah.
The theater was dying. I mean,
I put good work into this, man. Like
the critics can say what they want, but who cares? Theater's dying.
Sometimes I just sit there and go, "What movie are you watching?" With the critics, it's like, are you watching this movie with an audience? Don't watch it by yourself. I want you.
Critic screenings are worse. You can ask him. I hate going to them.
Really?
I hate going to them.
They should watch it with people.
Marlon, I don't like going to them. I'll sit next to Leonard Maltin.
Who do they
and I'm
watch
like,
it with?
And, you know, Leonard will just be sitting there. And I think he snores through half of them. And I'm like, brother. Go see it with an audience. That's what I think. Oh, The Hobbit? I left early. I went to Todd Phillips' office to mack on some broads. I'm like, I ain't fucking. This ain't fun. There's nothing fun about sitting with critics.
No.
I mean, it ain't.
What is this critic screening like? Like,
oh, okay.
I've never been to one.
So you show up.
How many people?
Let's say, well, it depends too. It depends if it's a studio screening or if it's at like the Grove or something.
Right.
They'll rope off like 3 rows for critics if it's at the Grove.
Right.
And then so you got to sit with when I was in Chicago where I'm from, like I'll sit with Richard Roper and I'm not a critic.
Right.
I consider myself an actor who does interviews and does my own show.
Right.
So like I don't even like hanging with them as it is.
Because one day you fuckers are you critiquing me right now?
Oh, they're all going to hate me.
Are you fuckers critiquing me watching this movie?
Yeah, they're all going to hate me. So
you know what they should do?
Yeah.
Here's what they do. They should do, like, they should have a regular person critique a critic. When they come out with fucking, I'm going to start critiquing
that's
the
a great
critic.
Website
that
right
would be
there. That's
awesome.
A website through the roof.
That
right
would be
there.
Awesome.
You got to open that website.
Oh, my God.
Because you don't
critique
give a shit.
Critique the critic. Fuck you.
That's
critique
a good
the
website.
Critic.
Like the Rotten Tomatoes for critics. So you go to a critic screen at a studio, though, and it's all critics, and I could just tell whether it's The Lucky One with Zac Efron, whether it's The Hobbit, whatever it is, they all come in with these faces. It's like they're not excited to be there.
Right.
It could be the biggest movie ever. They just got this serious face. I'm there to fuck around and joke around. You'll try to like joke with Joe Morgenstern, and he's like, ugh. And I'm like, all right, bro, whatever. Whatever. I just think it's funny the Wall Street Journal reviews movies. You don't think it's so funny? So you don't want to go to one of those.
No,
fuck. They're the worst. But let me tell you this. So this is what I'm getting at. Your movie's always fucking open. How are you not getting phone calls the next day going, bro, we know you could bang these out for $5 to $10 million even.
Yeah.
And we can have hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
Are they calling or do you just want to do your own thing so bad that you're kind of like, I'm going to hold back?
Well, I'm starting to get calls now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I get calls, like I Am Global, who, you know, we did this movie with. They really appreciate and like the business that we did.
They're waiting for your next one.
Yeah, you do a $2 million movie and it does $18 million opening weekend. You're 1,000 times your profit on the first like 3 days of opening.
Awesome.
People are ecstatic. So I'll probably have a deal to do a 3-picture deal over there and probably distribute it through it with Open Road because
so,
I really like
so
them.
You take the risk, you do a $2 million
and big
props
to Endgame. Endgame put up $20 million for us to market. And
oh, that's great.
So we used it was Open Road and Endgame and Jason Cerd over at Endgame. I really appreciate that.
I'm glad you're
well.
Appreciative of all yeah, that man. Kind of stuff too because I get you know I interview a lot of people, man, and no one's ever thanking the fucking studios and
you
production.
You gotta
company.
Thank the people that give you the fucking money,
right?
It's like you got to thank, like, God, always right. God, because whether you exist or not, mm-hmm. it's only the right thing to fucking
right.
do.
Right, just in case.
Yeah, just in case he is up there. He's probably present, and he's probably watching. So I want to take this time to thank God, too. Thank God. You got to thank your parents because they fucking raised you. Even if you hate them and they was shit parents, they didn't fuck and make you, you wouldn't be here. So, Pop, thanks for coming, and Mom, thanks for getting me here. And then, you know, you got to thank the people that put up the money in. And because they're your partners and they're the people that you do business with. And, you know, it's not one man that makes this a success. It's an engine. It's working as a team.
I mean,
that's true.
And then even actor-wise, you had Koechner, you had Cedric, you got Nick Swartz. And so you brought in some funny fucking guys.
And how funny were they? And what's great
Koechner's great.
Wasn't he great?
I know people that don't get Koechner's comedy.
Well, how don't you get Koechner? He's fucking
I don't know.
Hilarious.
Because Koechner
He's
has the
subtle.
Ball
yeah.
to play characters that are unlikable.
Yeah.
That's why people that take this shit too seriously,
yeah.
they're like, I don't like him.
Right.
You don't understand. He's playing a character that's a fucking
most
asshole.
Most lovable dude in
On
the world.
On The Office, he's an asshole.
Right.
Anchorman, asshole. He's
right.
a racist asshole
right.
in this. But that's why he's funny.
But the racist asshole is so
that's
funny.
So funny.
Wait till I put this scene in there, man. Like, I cut that scene down. But, man, he was going
in the,
there.
In the back, in,
yeah,
when
in
you're
the
in
back.
The back checking out the cameras
he
and shit.
He was going there. He was like, you know, and your kids got on gold
Can
chains.
Can I say it?
And they're smoking crack. And he was just going. And him going, Can I say, like,
Can I
that
say
was
it?
Improv. Like, we just went there.
I felt that.
And he was great.
But you know what's great is you also don't know if it's – this is what's great about your movies. And I was talking to somebody about this. I forget who, but I was talking to somebody about how if – even if it's the written word, if it sounds like you improvised it, you did your job.
Right.
Like, and that's what it sounded like this whole movie. It sounded like, oh, they're just having fun, and they're improvising, and they're cracking up. And even so, if you had jokes in the script, I wouldn't have known there was a script.
Right.
I just thought it was fucking funny.
Right.
I just thought you guys were going.
It
the acting was that good.
It was 70% written, and then 30% improv. Like, yeah. I encouraged everybody, like, after we did, like, a take or two, look, I'm hiring funny people to work on a funny script and to make it funnier. So with us, the best joke wins. If you can make the joke better, yeah. who the fuck am I to – if whatever makes the set laugh, that's what I'm going
That's whatever you're doing any project.
Yeah.
You're like, if that person makes it that much better, you bring them.
But it's not like that in normal comedies.
No.
When you do, when I go on a set, and, you know, a lot of times they think – it's like you have to let an actor interpret the material. Like
yeah.
a musician would, like you fucking get Miles Davis to do his version of My Funny Valentine.
So when you were doing a studio production like a Six Man,
yeah,
are they like stick to the script, Miles?
It's more I get to improvise a little bit,
right?
But
David Spade, stick to the script, brother.
Yeah, senseless. But Spade, you know, Penelope kind of let us go for it.
That's
you know,
good.
So we kind of went for it. But there's situations that you walk into and they go, just stick to the
Lady
script.
Lady Killers, probably.
Well, Lady Killers, they let me improvise.
Oh, Coen
Brothers
let you,
was like,
they're smart. They
dude,
get it.
The whole shit when I was talking about his finger was flopping around and brought your bitch to the Waffle Hut. Some of that was written and some of that was improvised. They let me go for it, and I love them for that. Like, that
yeah.
is smart. I took a page out of their book and out of Wayne's book when I did this movie, which is you hire funny people to do funny things and you let them
right.
off the chain to be funny.
What about when you take a role like G.I. Joe? Do you know that you're supposed to be an action guy, or do you want to go in there and be like, I'm going to bring some humor to this, too?
You want to bring humor, but the reality is I did literally 89%. No, I'd say 95% of it was written, and
yeah.
I just did what they wrote me.
And you were cool with that, or did you want to add some spice to it, and they were just like, the studio, it's a huge studio picture.
I was trying to be as appropriate as I possibly
sure.
could.
You knew what they were going
the lines
for.
And yeah, so I tried to step in and do what I felt like they needed me to do for the movie. I didn't want to make it the Marlon Wayans picture, mm-hmm. and, you know, my character I felt was silly enough, and I didn't want to go too silly, so... You know, but it doesn't matter because in the sequel, I stepped on a landmine, apparently.
I guess.
My mom didn't get, like, my dog tag.
I saw the first trailer.
There was no 10-gun salute.
In the first trailer, before they went back and reshot all that shit, they show like what's supposed to be the crew from the last movie, and they're all stepping on mines, or they all blew up or something.
Isn't it fucked
up? I'm like, you show that in the trailer?
What's worse than that, Matt, is like when you're on set and you're like, yeah, well, yeah, we'll start, because this is a joke that you always do. You go, yeah, we'll start the next movie off with yeah, we're at your funeral, Ripcord, and we'll joke about it, and then they fucking did it.
Right.
I was like, wait, I really died.
All right,
what do you
so
mean?
Why are you not in that movie then?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Not the Do-Re-Mi? They didn't follow up with that?
No, it's not even about the money. This was just like a creative decision. Like they
because I heard
to,
they were going to kill off Channing Tatum in the sequel.
They
kind of
did. Channing has a small part in the sequel.
That's what I heard. Well, I heard now that now he has a bigger part. They went back and reshot because I guess people were pissed. Yeah, I got some inside dirt on that one.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he got paid a lot to come back and reshoot. He's doing it right now.
I don't know. He's doing great.
Yeah.
But yeah, he said it. I'm lucky I'm not in it.
I bet.
He's like, if they could CGI me out, I probably would. But he's like, look, at the end of the day, when people make movies, you got to allow them to make their creative choices. Yeah. I didn't produce that movie. I was lucky enough for them and the producers to put me in it. And when they change directors, that chances are it's going to go a different way.
Yeah.
And so it happened to me on Batman. Tim Burton hired me, and then Joel Schumacher got hired for the next Batman, and so I didn't get to be Robin. But my Burton's vision was with me as Robin. Schumacher's was with what's his name,
Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah, but then again, I can't be mad because. Me as Robin, I go, you know what? My dick is way too big to be Robin.
to wear spandex.
It's going
to
be really intimidating when
Schumacher
would have liked
that. I'm surprised you didn't go with you.
Too much. Because then my cock shot would have been all veiny and crazy.
Yeah, it
would
have
been
nipples.
A distraction. He did have nipples. Right? I was like, what?
I don't know what was up with that. let me ask you about this. So you kind of branch out from your family with this one. What was behind that choice? Was it just time for you? You're like, I kind of want to do my own thing right now. Not as disrespect, but like, I just want to do my own thing.
It just, you know, some things lend themselves to a family project, and other things lend themselves to just, you know, it's either going to be you or Sean. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to write and star and produce my own picture. And my brothers kind of wanted me to, to be on my own and to do my thing. You get to that point, it's like, look, at a point, Michael Jackson's voice changed, and he was like, you know what? I want to be a solo artist. I don't want to do dance moves. I'm tired of splitting the money with Tito and you guys.
So are you Michael or Janet?
I think I'm Jermaine.
You're
doing
Jermaine?
Let's Get Serious.
It's
the Jermaine Let's Get Serious album. But honestly, my brothers, man, I love them to death, and it's not like New Edition,
they're
and I'm Bobby smoking crack. We're going to get back together, and we're going to do something together.
Dude, your family is fucking amazing.
I love those bastards.
They're like, seriously, to me, you guys are the kings of comedy.
Well,
seriously.
Thank you, bro. Thank you.
Let me ask you.
That's because you like a lot of weed.
No, I used to.
Really?
Don't anymore.
Good man.
Oh, I can't anymore. I got to work.
That's the thing about weed.
I smoke all the time. I'm going to have no
sleep.
Career.
None. Something got to go. Like, you could, even with drinking, it's like, you know what? I got to have a drink or two. After that, I can't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I quit drinking, too.
Good man.
I had to do the whole
good
thing.
Good man.
I turned to a common overnight. Because common don't do none of that
common
shit
anymore. Common don't drink Osmo. Mm-mm. He don't drink?
That's what I heard.
At all?
That's what I'm told.
Wow. I'm going to quit drinking.
Yeah.
I quit.
I'll ask him.
I quit today. No more drinks.
That's right.
Just green tea.
Well, I guess
after I drink this wine, can you give me one? I'm fucking with you.
You can enjoy the drink now.
Nah.
You ain't working today. You can.
You know what?
I
am working today.
Yeah, you're doing this.
And then after this, I'm going to the house. I'm going to start thinking about what's the next movie I want
to
do.
That's what you need to do.
Yeah, man.
That's what you need to do. Here's some questions from the tweets, the Twitters.
Is this live?
No, I'm here. Wednesday we do it live.
I was going to say, that's really cool.
We do it live on
live
Wednesday.
Shit.
Okay,
good.
Well, it doesn't get edited, if that helps.
You know what? I'm pretty uneditable anyway.
Right.
I just say stupid
shit. Me too.
Shit.
That's why we don't edit it.
And I like the fact
it.
That you could curse and shit like that. Like,
yeah.
I thought about doing a podcast, but it seems like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and you're a little too big for that shit.
No, but you know what? I just like to talk
you
shit.
You ain't Adam Carolla.
I like to talk shit, though. But it's not about big. It's like, to me, I like being small. I like being every fucking day. I'm not the movie star that wears
glasses.
Do
something more creative. Like, do some commentaries on movies or something. Just like watch the movies.
Critique the critic.
Yeah, critique the critic. How do you like doing stand-up as you prepare for Pryor?
You know what? Pryor probably will not happen.
You don't think so?
I hope so. But if it does, I'm going to wear that shit out. Because of stand-up. I've been doing stand-up now 2.5 years. going up there. By the way, I'm be at the Borgata with my brother Sean in Atlanta,
February 9th.
So make sure, I just want to plug. You know, follow me on Twitter at Marlon Elway. And so I've been doing it 2.5 years, and I really find that it's helped me as a writer. Mm-hmm. It's really helped me as a performer. It's made me less desperate. Like, I can sit in the pocket and I can listen and then make them laugh. Whereas before, I'd just be off the fucking wall without conversation or nothing. And I would just be like, you know what? I'm pulling my dick out.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, why did you pull it out?
You're just lucky, though, you could go straight into headlining, because when you're building your way up as a stand-up, as I'm sure Damon's probably explaining you and stuff, like, and you got to compete with a guy that goes on after you, a guy that goes on before you, like, that's insane. That's insane. That is what drives me nuts.
I do that.
When I did stand-up, you do?
I got Will Savant, who goes in front of me.
Yeah.
And then I got my brother Sean, who goes in back of me. So for me, it's like, and I, what I've learned, because Will Savant kills it.
Yeah.
He's such a great stand-up.
And that makes you go, fuck.
It makes you, and I've only been doing it 2.5 years, but it makes me have to step up.
Competitive.
Every night and go, you know what? He blew it up. I got to go do my thing. I can't come out here and I suck. And beyond that, then Sean comes on after me, and Sean's amazing. Mm-hmm. People don't know how fucking funny this dude is. He's been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing. Like, he should have dropped 12 specials. He hasn't dropped one because he's still sitting there going, you know, it's not perfect.
Yeah, right.
It's like, fucker.
Do you write all your material, or do you wing some stuff up there?
I wing, but I write.
Yeah.
I only wing when I want to add something to my bit. But I like doing my set, but I like to wing it too, because then for me, it's finding it. I like finding something new every night.
I'm just so happy you're on the road with Sean. By the way, you guys did a show at the Improv in Schaumburg.
Yeah, we did.
Off the hook, I was told. Yeah. Everyone said you were great. So if you need to sell tickets for Atlantic City for our East Coasters, trust me, I've been told by great sources, off the hook. That's great right there.
Trust me, because Chicago, they don't play. Chicago and New York will literally sit there, and they'll laugh and go, huh.
No.
Yeah. And quick. It's not long laugh. They're like, ha-ha-ha.
Right.
Down south, you go, ha.
Right, right.
They'll laugh for 5 minutes.
My sister went to Chris Tucker's show in Florida, and she goes,
they laugh.
They do laugh.
Like, Florida gives you, like, applause break.
Right.
It's like, fuck. I'm only able to do 3 jokes in 30 minutes in Florida. Chicago, you laugh.
Yeah, you better come through.
What else? You have
what
to
else? Yeah, right. What else?
Yeah.
Is there anyone that helped you with your stage act? Sean, probably.
You know, my brother kind of was there for me in terms of afterward, I would call him and be like, yo, I got you. Like, he would listen to what I had to say. Like, after my set, I'd be like, yo, I killed. I did 40 minutes tonight. Yo, I killed. I did 20 minutes. This joke wasn't working so much. And, like, he'll give me a tag here and there. I'll go try going this angle. But really, I learned from watching through osmosis, watching my brother Damon, watching my brother Sean. You know, I've been around comedy for 20 years or 40 years since I've been born. So it's kind of like just doing it was the best thing I could do.
Yeah.
And watching. And, you know, I have friends, like my boy Steve will come watch me and he'll tape me and be like, you know, that was funny, but this bit right here that you're working on. So I'll take
That's
notes,
right.
But I like to write and produce my own shit. Like,
Steve,
for real.
So Steve is not your yes man. They ain't no yes man, right?
If it's not funny, he goes, you know, bro, that was that one
That's
joke.
That's what you need. That's what you need.
That one joke was really offensive. Because look, I know you say like nigger like 40 times in your act, but being a nigger, it kind of affects me as a 40th man.
That's good. All right, so another question was the pressure of being in a performing family. Is there pressure?
Nah, I think you – look, I'm not trying to be better than anybody in my family. I'm just trying to be me, and I think you take the pressure off. With pressure – you know, I think people put the pressure on you, but you grow through exceeding the expectations that they put on you.
Yeah.
So I can't worry about me putting pressure on me because I got to be free to create and to do and to make my mistakes. I'm not going to be perfect. Some of the shit ain't going to be funny. But you know what? The more I don't give a fuck, the better off people will give a fuck about me.
Right, right. Did you ever I totally agree with that, by the way. I don't give a fuck.
That is a bumper sticker. Right. That's a bumper sticker. I don't give a fuck so that people really will give a fuck about me.
Because I think people do. That's how people get to know the real you, by the way. When you don't give a fuck, then they're like, oh, I like Marlon, and I consistently like Marlon
because
he's the same dude.
Yep.
He doesn't change,
yep.
And that's what's important.
And I'm approachable. Like, even on Twitter, like, people that say they hate my...
Dude, they love you on Twitter.
They do love me, but every now and then you'll get, like, somebody will go, you know what, I didn't like the movie so much. I was like, you know what? I respect your opinion. You know, I'm not mad at you. Thank you for going to see it. I'm not mad, but just know that you are in the minority.
Right.
And you don't have to do it.
We're very similar. I respond to every single person on Twitter, and I respond to every email I get, everything. Yeah. Even if it's like someone asked me a week ago, they're like, have you blown Ryan Seacrest yet? I'm like, I have.
Twice.
How dare you, sir? How dare you ask me that?
Twice, and just for asking me, I'm going to spit his jizz in your mouth. Isn't it sweet?
But yeah, I'll even respond to the haters, because you know what I've learned about haters? Is if you respond to them nicely, calmly, maybe you're self-deprecating, they don't hate you no more.
They don't hate you in the first
place.
They're
like, shit, I can't fucking rip on them. Right.
They want attention. You know what I do to haters? I blow their ass up. Like, I will make them feel like shit. And then afterward, give them a nice Twitter handshake like, yo, good sparring with you. Because assholes like you really prepare me for when I'm on stage and I get an asshole in the audience and I need to just shut his ass down real fast.
Dude, I read a shitty fucking column in the Chicago Tribune where they were talking about how hecklers are good for comedy.
Fuck
and
no.
Horseshit.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Hecklers are only scared people that want to be funny, that think they're funny, that's too scared to get on stage, and they sit in the audience and they get drunk, and then they feel like, oh, I'm funny now.
Yep.
You're the funniest guy on your block. Shut the fuck up and learn. If you could get on the stage and make people laugh consistently for 45 minutes to an hour, then you're a stand-up. And people come to see you, and you can literally make them laugh and applaud.
Yep.
And appreciate what you have to say. It's not about hecklers. Dude, the show's not about you.
I agree.
This is not an improv show.
I can't believe the Tribune wrote this.
It's fucking crazy.
I'm like, seriously, a professional wrote this?
But it will make you better.
Yeah.
I feel like everything will make you better. You know, I think, look.
Adversity always helps you.
When America went to war in Vietnam, and yeah, we lost the war, but fighting a war like that with people hiding in trees and spitting blow darts and... they never fought a fucking guerrilla war like that. But now they know, you know what? After that, we're going to send drones in.
Yeah.
We're not going to go fight in the city. We're going to get some fucking infrared cameras. And we're going to send fucking drones in. And we're going to fucking kill that way. They got smarter. All it does is when you meet hecklers or any kind of obstacle, it makes you better if you sit back and assess it. So I'm happy for them. I'm not mad.
As someone who does something similar and from the outside looking in, how much did you like Tropic Thunder?
You know,
do you watch it like and I thought be that, like, I would have done this differently or that?
Yeah,
you do?
I see opportunity for such big jokes here, and you might have missed one here and there. I like Tom Cruise. I thought his character
was great.
Funny.
Yeah.
And I love Robert Downey Jr.
I thought McConaughey was funny too.
Yeah. McConaughey was good.
Right.
But my favorite was Robert Downey Jr. in that movie.
It was incredible.
Him playing the black guy, just the way he played him was real.
Who gets nominated for an Oscar for that kind of role? That's how good he is.
I got nominated for 17 Razzies where I did my chicks. God bless Robert Downey Jr.
Would you show up and accept a Razzie if they gave you one?
Fuck yeah, I'd host a Razzie.
Yeah, I would too.
Dude, I've been trying to fucking... I want to Dick Clark the Razzie.
Fuck the haters.
I want to Dick Clark the Razzies. I want to do Rand Brothers present the fucking Razzies every year on Comedy Central. I'm serious.
You'd be good at it.
I'm going to do it.
You should.
I'm going to fucking
you should.
Go reach out this year.
I shouldn't say this out loud, considering I'm trying to get a career here, but...
I vote on the Razzies. You do?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I'm a voter.
I'm tired.
I've never voted for you.
I'm the Susan Lucci. I'm the Susan Lucci of fucking Razzies.
You're
like,
good at it.
I keep getting
nominated but
I can't
win.
Fucking win.
No. No.
But I don't give a fuck.
Do you ever look at the list of Razzie nominations and go, hit movie, hit movie, hit movie, hit movie, biggest bomb of the year.
Yeah.
Hit movie, hit movie, hit movie. And you're like, what do we hate?
Some people I go, you know what? They deserve.
Sure.
Halle Berry and Catwoman. Yeah. It was a shit movie.
Yeah,
but you know, she was
and
awesome.
And Halle knows.
But she was awesome in Monster of the Fall.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people you go, she or he. Definitely, but then sometimes you go, nah, that's bullshit. Like, one year they nominated Sandra Bullock, and I'm just going, no.
Like, Stallone gets nominated way too much.
It's way too
like,
much.
Like, dude, you're just hurting.
We all know
feelings.
He's Stallone.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be great. He's fucking Stallone. The fact that he's Stallone, he's been Stallone for 60 fucking years.
Yeah.
Never nominate him for a Razzie. Schwarzenegger, never. Yeah, you give him a Razzie for being the governor of Sacramento. He was fucking terrible. He was fucking terrible governor of fucking of California. Terrible.
My favorite thing about Stallone is that bit Eddie Murphy used to do.
Which one?
Was it in Delirious?
Yeah. When they went to the Stallone movie.
Yeah. The Italian guy.
Hey, Mooly.
Yeah, right.
And fucking Mooly over here. Yeah.
That's my favorite bit.
I've seen him in, last night. It was Stallone and Schwarzenegger on Golden Globe.
Oh, you watch that stuff.
It looked like HGH and steroids. Came
I heard
alive.
Stallone's face was like melting.
It was. It's like it was barely like sticking on it. Like for real. It's fucking crazy.
You watched the Globes then?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Do you like enjoy them or what? Or
you
do
know,
you sit there and kind of like Mystery Science Theater it?
It wasn't that fun this year. No. I missed having. I think Ricky Gervais was a lot of fucking fun.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like hanging out with a drunk guy in an Irish pub.
That's what I want.
But that's what's funny, you know. I thought Tina Fey and what's her name?
Poehler.
Yeah, they did a good job. It was cute.
Yeah.
But
cute, right.
They were nice and they were sweet.
It was 180 from Gervais.
Yeah, Gervais is like, I'm going to talk.
I can't believe they gave him the role 2 years in a row.
You know what? He's fucking funny.
And he didn't give a shit
I hope
either.
They bring him back because it's fun when you don't give a fuck because the audience at home.
I agree.
The people in the room, they're a little more sensitive, but the audience at home. They don't give a fuck. And
right.
So they like having somebody that just don't give a fuck. And Gervais don't give a shit.
We're doing this pilot right now, which is kind of like, the base of it's kind of like Dinner for Five, what Favreau used to do. But Carnahan
right.
and I were blowing it up. And like, you know, people like working on it are like, all right, are you ready? Do you know how you're going to act on this thing? I go, I'm not going to act.
No,
I just
gonna
don't
be.
Give a fuck.
Right.
I'm just going to be.
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
Who cares? If people don't accept me like this, they ain't going to accept my acting either.
Fuck them. Exactly.
Right.
This is me. At the end of the day, the purest form of acting is getting to you. So
right.
if you start
Being.
Out going, fuck you,
yeah.
fuck you, I'm going to be me. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't want to be liked. I want to be loved for what I do, which is not give a fuck about being hated.
Dude, and you make people laugh. Are we going to – so you're saying – it's not like you're not going to get back together with the Waynes. By the way, in Living Color, like there was supposed to be a relaunch. I know it's not happening, but that would be a great show to be on again. I don't know why they're not.
You know, I probably wouldn't do a Living Color.
You wouldn't?
I would start.
Well, not you wouldn't be on it, but would you?
I think
start a new series.
Start a new series.
Because
Living Color is what it is, and it was what it was. It's kind of like trying to reincarnate somebody, and you always it's like. It's never
the only thing
the
I was thinking today, like the Fly Girls, the clothing, the sketches. In Living Color encapsulated the 90s.
Yeah.
But encapsulated the 90s.
Yeah.
So you would have to do a totally different
totally
thing.
Totally different. And you bring...
And you'd have to go somewhere with money. So not Comedy Central.
You know what? Comedy Central, even though it doesn't have money...
Yeah, right.
Over time, they find money.
That's
if
true.
If you're successful.
If you're Dave Chappelle.
Look, the guys at South Park are not mad right now.
Yeah, no, I think they're okay.
So you just go in there and you rock it and you just prove them that
they're
an
opening
audience.
A movie studio today, I heard.
Really? Good for
That's
them.
That's why I hear they're doing their own company.
Good.
Is that someone you'd love to work with, like Trey
Absolutely.
Parker and Matt Stone?
Because
they're dope.
I think
they're
to
great.
Collaborate with those guys would fucking be awesome.
Dude, remember Basketball got the worst reviews. I thought it was hilarious.
I didn't see Basketball.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
I'm going to go watch Basketball.
It's like, who
tonight.
Gives a fuck? It's funny.
Right.
Like, you just don't get it.
Right.
Critics just want to hate, man.
Critics need to smoke a blunt and shut the fuck up.
Yep.
That's what they, like, for real. They need to become an audience member. They need to, you know, get a, don't come to fucking see a comedy wearing a Argyle fucking sweater and, you know, a shirt and tie. No, good one, put on a t-shirt, put on some goddamn jeans, put on some sneakers, get some buttery popcorn. You know, don't get the no butter popcorn. Get the buttery popcorn, that heart attack shit. Don't have a fucking Diet Coke. No, fuck off. Have a goddamn Sprite or the fucking juicy shit that black people drink. You know, some fruit punch. And have some fucking Goobers. And enjoy yourself.
Yeah,
don't overthink this shit.
It's the first time I got popcorn in a movie in like a year. I go, this is the perfect popcorn movie. I'm eating the popcorn. I go, I never get popcorn. I go, this is what this shit's for.
This is
a popcorn movie.
It is.
I got to tell you, man, I'm so grateful that you did this. I do want to ask you the last thing about is, because I didn't know her name. I forgot. I looked at the credits. And I forgot.
Essence Atkins?
No. I know Essence. She's great in it,
She was
way.
Great. And she only had 3 weeks. After
She
had a baby, 3 to 4 weeks before
she
we started filming.
Phenomenal.
Her tits was crazy.
By the way, one of my favorite bits in the movie is when the first night, when she comes out of the bathroom, she's like, I'm getting ready for you. I'm like, uh-huh.
That's real life. That's why I put that shit in there. Yeah.
And then I love the bit you do after. I don't want to ruin it, but it's fucking funny.
Thank
That's
you, bro.
Fucking good.
Thank
but
you.
the Hispanic made stuff.
Oh yeah.
Fucking hilarious.
Thank you, bro. Thank you.
But especially the way the movie opens.
Her name is Maria.
Oh no. You're gonna feel so bad.
No. Hold up, 1 second. Marlene, and then Marlene, I gotta get a laugh.
Marlene was fantastic. Okay, and in other news.
Marlene.
But I'll explain for our listeners why you're taking a sip of that water there. Listen, there's these scenes in this movie where Marlon's character has an Hispanic housekeeper, and she is so dope. It's so funny in it. So fucking funny. It's just good. I don't want to ruin the. I just don't want to ruin all the shit in it, though, because it's funny. It's funny.
I'm really going to find. Okay, Marlene. Okay, what's her name? Marlene Forte.
Forte.
All right. Damn.
Sister of Matt Forte.
Okay. That's hilarious. But she was really funny. She was game. She was game.
She was funny.
When we had her doing the shit with the drugs and then banging the.
By the way, if you need another reason to go see it, tits galore. Not just Marlon's ass, okay? Marlon threw some tits in there, too, just to make sure.
She smacked the girl who was played by Leandra Mendoza. That's the tits.
At the end of the scene where she's like,
and shoots her.
Yeah.
But we just went for the fucking joke. Like, there's at least 20 big laughs in the movie.
There is. There's a lot of big laughs.
Yeah. And you know what? It's not something to overthink. It's just something to go fucking do. In essence, to her credit, dragged her around the house, breast milk every fucking air, and she fucking just rocked the movie.
By the way, you know what was so in Living Color, Don't Be a Menace, about this movie is it was one storyline in general.
Yes.
And that's the Cedric the Entertainer. Cedric in this movie is a character out of In Living Color or out of, like, you think he's going to do the same thing Jimmy Woods did for you guys with Scary Movie.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
He's the black perspective. And that's what's funny.
Dude, it was so dope.
It's that black perspective.
It's like he just
truthful.
Got out of Oz.
Yes. And he's just like, just raped some dude right before he came to the door. And now he's just like, the ghost rape.
I can't believe that's never been done before. Well, the ghost rape's never been done before. Yes, there is ghost raping in this movie. But I can't believe this Cedric character's never been done before. I'm thinking there. I go, because this is too fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, the Cedric character was too fucking good where I'm sitting there going, this has been done before.
Never.
This is.
Never.
And I couldn't think of it, man.
Never.
Never.
Never. Him smoking the weed while he's doing the.
How has that never been done before? How's that been sitting there for 80 years just waiting for you to pick it off and be like. Mm-hmm.
I think everybody else is just like, wait.
Too scared.
He's a man of God.
Right. It's like,
you can't make him smoke weed and do coke and do an exorcism.
Yeah, I like when she shows the cuts. Dude, I can talk about some funny shit in this movie. This movie's funny, man.
Thank you, bro.
Funny.
Thank you, man.
I ain't a critic, but I loved it. So
yeah, you know what?
That.
You are a critic.
But I go to the critic screenings.
But you're an audience, and the audience, and you're truthful, and you're honest. With shit, you probably go, hey, I ain't like it that much. And I'd be like, you know, look, I did a Rosenberg show in Rosenberg and Cypress Sound.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to be honest with you. The trailer looks like shit. I was like, okay, well, see the movie. See the movie. I gave him $100 and was like, go see the movie. I'll buy you popcorn. I'll treat you and a girl and a couple of friends. Go see the movie. And I want you to call me back afterward. If you hate the movie, keep the $100. If you love the movie, all I want you to do is apologize, give me $100 back, and $14 for your ticket. And that's fucking up. That's all. That's all.
And do you like it?
I don't know.
You haven't heard.
I gotta call this fucker.
You know why he's avoiding you?
Trying to keep the $100.
Yeah, he's trying to keep the $100. He's like, fuck.
I gotta give this $100 back.
I need to come up with some bullshit. He's out of the country.
That's hilarious.
Marlon, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having
me,
bro.
And by the way, you're just as great as Carnahan said you'd
be. Thank you, bro. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, yeah. You two need to work together. That's what needs to happen.
You know what?
Joe.
One day we'll all three do some shit.
Yeah, well, we have those opportunities.
Let's do it.
Just waiting.
Well, bring me on.
Thank you so much, brother. And,
thank you.
We will hopefully have you on anytime you want, man.
Shake hands.
Anytime you want.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you both.
All right, that is the esteemed Marlon Wayans. He's great.
Yeah, man, he's down to earth, dude.
He's now my new favorite Wayans. Move over, Keenan.
Move over, Kim.
Yeah, move over, Kim. Move over.
Okay.
I got my new favorite Wayans now. That's right. Haunted House in theaters now. I think I sold the shit out of it.
I think you did.
As I should have.
Yeah.
Because, you know, go see it. It's a comedy. All these Oscar movies out right now. Go see a comedy. Plus, I like when the comedy business does well. It's a good thing for me.
It's
a good thing for me. It's a good thing for you. You know, and they have not been putting out movies like this for a while. And it's definitely, it's way better than like those epic movies and all the those parody movies.
Because
this really isn't a parody. And, you know, it's interesting because they haven't put out a movie like this in a while. And I think this is Marlon's first project they wrote and starred in without any other weigh-ins. And he killed it, man. It's $20 million later. It cost $2 million.
Jeez.
He made 1,000% back in one weekend. That's some good business for Tommy Ortz. Tom Ortenberg over at Open Road.
Yeah.
Tommy Ortz. I think he,
Tommy
I wonder,
Ortz.
Does he like Tommy Ortz?
I thought that was his actual name.
Yeah.
Like, that's a name I can believe someone would have.
I wonder if he likes Tommy Ortz. I'm going to ask him. I'm going to be like, is Tommy Ortz okay? Or
doesn't
do
matter.
I
that's
call
his new name.
Mr. Rowe.
Yeah, like in high school, yeah.
Why have we never interviewed Tommy Ortz? You know, he was open to it, just like Harvey Weinstein was open to it. But we haven't heard back from Harvey. Here are the three people who were considering doing interviews on the show who I've never heard back from. Or, well, we heard back from and they're like, oh, yeah, let's work it out, blah, 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 whatever. Tom Ortenberg. Never happened yet. Tom, calling you out, brother.
Okay.
Harvey Weinstein. Said he's interested. Never got back to us.
Harvey, we'd still love to have you.
And Ari Emanuel.
Okay.
The one time William Morris did not write Pat a restraining order and tell him to fuck off was, of course, when I was going to promote Ari Emanuel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when I call Ari about charity, they don't do charity.
No, they don't. It's not because...
I'm sure he does charity.
Yeah.
I'm sure Ari does plenty of charity.
I like that, though, because those are very three highly accessible people. I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't be able to get those people.
But what's interesting about those people is they don't tell you to fuck off. That's nice of them. Because I could name a couple studio executives that would tell me
might,
to go fly a fucking
plane. You might be bigger than them someday, and you're going to remember that.
Yeah, well, there's some people that are smart out here.
That's right.
Some people. Do we go to the Notre Dame story, or did you have anything? You got something? You got a story, right?
No, I don't.
No, you've decided to go back to the writer's lab?
No, I had that thing I was going to – I didn't get to finish it because I couldn't find the shtick that I had for last week. So I was trying to rewrite it before the show, and I couldn't remember it. I'm pathetic. I'm the J.D. Salinger of humor. I just produce nothing.
Okay. Well,
go to the Notre Dame thing.
Oh, by the way, I'm trashing things. I'm trashing things, as you can hear.
Okay. What was that?
That's me trashing shit. Okay. So this Notre Dame story is totally out there, man. Totally out there. I was telling you about outside while I was having a smoke. So it's Monty Teo, and I went to a Notre Dame game in October. Fucking freezing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are complaining out here about the cold because it's L.A. and, oh, my God, it's 50 fucking five.
Yeah, right.
Boy, when a super virus comes to destroy us all.
Yeah.
Los Angelinos will be the first ones to.
Oh, yeah, no. We'll be begging for our lives before it even comes.
Right.
Like, there'll be a rumor on the internet it's coming, and we'll be begging. So I go to this game at Notre Dame in October, and it's like 40 degrees, and it's freezing, and everyone there is like, thank God it's still warm in October. Yeah, so that's the difference between here and there.
Yes.
Yep. And I'm sitting there freezing. I'm like, fuck you. I'm not used to this anymore. But so it's Monty Teo. He's really, really good. He's a linebacker for Notre Dame. He's their star. It's rare when a linebacker is your star. He's like the Urlacher at Notre Dame. Lance Briggs good. I mean, that's how good this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
So in September, his grandma dies. And on the same day, his girlfriend dies. And Sports Illustrated, ESPN, blah, blah, blah. And he plays a game that day, and he has 12 tackles. Sports Illustrated, ESPN, everyone gushing over this story. What an inspirational story. This, and that. Hollywood wants to make it the next Brian song, you know? Finds out today after Deadspin.com, which, you know, a lot of people rip on Deadspin for being trashy. They can be trashy, just like every other internet blog that's trying to get hits. But they actually are now doing the real reporting out there. Because ESPN didn't figure this out or didn't want to figure it out. Sports Illustrated didn't do their due diligence or didn't want to do their due diligence. But now the real papers and the real media outlets are no longer doing their due diligence. And when the media bitches about all these newspapers are folding this and that and everyone's reading everything on the internet, the reason why is internet reporters are actually doing reporting. They're doing research. They're doing due diligence on things. So Deadspin, been working on this for months, did due diligence on this. Her social security number shows that she never existed. No birth, no death, no obituary, no leukemia, no hospital, no car crash she was supposedly in a week or two before her death. No, she doesn't exist. There was no girlfriend. It was the movie Catfish. And now there's some evidence coming out that Monty Teo is one of the person, him and someone else created this girlfriend on the internet and killed her off. And killed her off at the same time his grandma died, by the way.
You already had grandma, though. What did you need a girlfriend for to burgeon the story?
Yeah, so now defensive college defensive player of the year, Monty Teo, made up a, and by the way, you're Monty Teo. Shouldn't you be able to get as much trim as you want?
Right.
And he's a Mormon.
Okay.
It gets better. Okay. So, listen, this guy's out of his fucking mind, right? Am I crazy? Like, they need to examine his brain for concussion.
Or he's a genius who knows how the media machine works, and he knows how to exploit something that's going to get him a deal.
But a genius wouldn't have gotten eyes caught. On him. A genius wouldn't have gotten caught, and now he's going to look really bad.
He didn't think he would get caught.
No, right.
But see, this is the thing, though. You can exploit that kind of stuff because people are suckers for a mawkish story involving death and is linked to his successes, and it's supposed to be so inspirational.
I mean,
you
can
make
up
that
this
shit
fake
up, and
girlfriend
people
having leukemia and getting bone marrow transplants and Twitter accounts, and people gave money to a charity in her name.
But the real story is here: people fell for it.
Yep.
People fall for it. Everyone believes everything they're told.
Sure, and now, well, that's what I'm saying about ESPN.
Why are Sacha Baron Cohen movies funny?
No, right. People buy it.
Right,
but here's the thing. How is Sports Illustrated and ESPN not doing due diligence on this, and it came from Deadspin.com? This is the real story for me. The real story for me is these people, oh, now Monty Teo claims he's the victim of a hoax. That's horseshit. That's what Notre Dame put out in a press release.
Right.
There is evidence showing him and his friend created this account. And just like Lance Armstrong, who, by the way, came out to Oprah this week saying he used steroids, I've not gotten one fucking apology from one fucking asshole that sent me hundreds of emails saying what a hero Lance Armstrong is.
Fuck him.
And I've seen people write on the internet, can I get my money back that I gave to Livestrong and bought all that Livestrong crap? I have not gotten one fucking apology. I got railroaded by people when I posted that story.
No, because you shit on their goofy little patriotic hero complex you shoved out there. You're supposed to be.
So in the same way, I'm going to say right now, I know there's a lot of domers maybe listening who are like, okay, let's not talk about this all day because it's bad for Notre Dame. Just like the rape story a few years ago where a teammate raped a girl and she committed suicide and Notre Dame tried basically covering it up.
Well, that's what, yeah.
And okay, but here's the deal. I know there's domers listening that don't want to hear this, but Monty Teo, great football player, complete scumbag, and had absolutely something to do with
it. But this is a better.
Sorry.
I think this is a better story now that this came out for a movie, in my opinion.
Oh, no, I do too. I thought movie when I read this.
Yeah.
I never thought movie when I read, oh, the girlfriend died 12 tackles.
For the Lance Armstrong people, first of all, choose your own heroes instead of accepting the ones that you're told to have as heroes, or better yet, don't have them.
Right.
And another thing. Why is this internet writer for Deadline.com, why isn't this person an actual journalist? Because isn't it fucked up that's what gets the coverage?
Yep.
Someone does investigative piece and outs this person immediately.
And by the way, now CBS is covering it, ESPN's covering it,
a worthy story,
covering it,
like,
and no one's saying
people
about
in wheelchairs smoking pot, smoking a joint, get caught, thrown in jail without any hope of getting out because we live in a horrible police state. Nothing comes out on that. That's kept hidden from us. But this all over this. What a scandal.
I don't think, by the way, with what you brought up, I don't think it's because people are trying to bury it. I think it's because no one's doing their fucking job. I think journalists as a whole have gotten
lazy and myopic.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. They basically borrow journalism from whoever does cover it.
Right.
And they just put it in their outlet and rewrite it or whatever.
Right.
Like what is going on right now.
You know, who drives out to go to a source and verify things and
nobody
go to the
anymore.
Library?
Nobody
Who's
anymore.
Got
That's
time?
Why there's no more good journalism movies. There's no more good journalism
that
movies
take place
because
in
there's
the
no
present
more good
day.
Journalist stories.
Right.
Yeah, because journalists don't do their fucking jobs anymore.
Yeah.
They don't do their
jobs. So people say that I think the media are liberal or conservative. I don't think
so much lazy. Now, instead of finding out the facts,
lazy in my
CBS,
opinion.
ESPN, everyone's reporting that Notre Dame's put out a press release talking about how Monty Tao says he's a victim of the hoax. Is anyone doing any due diligence on that, or are they now just going to say he's a victim of the hoax? And then the story the next day is going to be he wasn't a victim of the hoax. It's just to fill news. It's just to get hits.
Right.
See, it's like the movie The Paper that Ron Howard did, which I think is very underrated, actually. I think it's one of Ron Howard's better films. And there's a great point they make in that story, the Glenn Close character, where Michael Keaton wants to correct a headline because it's wrong. She goes, "It's wrong today. We'll be right tomorrow. You'll sell the paper today. You'll sell it tomorrow. We vindicate them the next day."
Right.
That's how the newspaper business works. And that's what's going on here, too. They're like, we'll use this story today. And then when something else comes out tomorrow, well, that'll be the story.
That'll
no one
it.
Cares about being right anymore.
No. No.
So
how long can we get this, keep this in the news, keep it a headline before it starts to get stale? How much traction can we get?
Well,
readers.
That's my rant on that. I really have nothing else on that because I think it's disgusting. And by the way, I'll fast forward you to the end of this story because...
Is it really disgusting, though? Are you really disgusted by what the guy did as the
both.
Way that people
I'm,
react? The reaction
I'm
to
I'm
me...
disgusted at the reaction. I'm disgusted at what he did. I'm disgusted by the whole thing. It's all disgusting.
The ensuing circus for me is always a lot more interesting than the original event because it says a lot more about our society and where we are, and it's more worthy of attention
reason. No, I agree with
Take
that.
Take any new major story, and I'm never as fascinated by it as I am by the circus, the ensuing circus.
I agree with that. The problem I have with this story is the problem I have with a lot of things where it's, you know, people, and but it comes back to what you said, which is about the circus, but people choose their heroes not so wisely.
Yes.
And this is part of the problem of being a meathead who watches sports and thinks these athletes are fucking heroes. And,
yeah,
you know,
hard, but hardcore sports fans historically are not the most independent, minded lot.
No.
As you may know.
No, they're not. They're meatheads.
Yeah.
They're meatballs. Pat just sent me something.
Are we getting hate mail?
Pat just sent me something from TMZ, which is probably more accurate than any other news source at the moment.
God, that is so depressing to me.
Matty Tao claims he was duped and humiliated. All right, I will tell you this. These are people not even reading the whole Deadspin article. There is a guy that came out who is Manny Teo's friend who said, "We created the hoax." They're not even reading the whole fucking article.
They click, they shut it off.
Yeah, they click, they read the headline, they go, "This is awful." Notre Dame sends him a little press release, and now all of a sudden, and by the way, the last line in the TMZ story is, "Are you buying what he's selling?" I am fast forwarding you to the end of the story right now. He was involved. There will be proof because the internet does not lie, and there will be proof on the internet.
Those people on that show, Matt, those are journalists.
Yeah, right.
That blonde hair guy with his hat backwards,
right.
That is a journalist.
But through cachet on the internet, because everything on the internet's there for life, you will find out he was involved. I'm promising you right now, you're all going to hate me for a few weeks, and then no one's going to apologize. But, yeah, he's a scumbag. He's involved. He wasn't duped. No, this is all horseshit. You're telling me, let me just, simple math as I like to tell people. I like to tell people simple math. I'll say this to Caesar, I say this to Pat Tobias.
Pat Tobias.
Anytime people overanalyze things, I say, you're thinking too much. Simple math. Defensive lineman of the year, probably going to go the top 10 in the draft. World famous, before any fake girlfriend.
Right.
This guy could get laid by whoever, whenever. Why is he falling in love, supposedly, with a girl he's never met on the internet? Sorry. That smells bullshit right the fuck there. Bullshit. It's complete and utter bullshit. This isn't You've Got Mail.
Right.
Okay? This is horseshit. You do not fall in love when you're that guy with girls you meet on Twitter.
Like, are you saying that when he's done with the game, or when practice is over, when the game is over, he just goes right home,
right,
goes to bed, stays
right
inside?
Well, that's what he said. No, what he used to write on Twitter was, yeah, I had an 8-hour phone call with my girlfriend, and she's in the hospital, and I woke up, and she was breathing this morning into the phone, and it was
an 8-hour
phone
call?
It was beautiful, yeah. This is all horseshit.
Yeah.
Horseshit.
That's not even...
I'm telling you, people, simple math. Don't overanalyze shit. Okay? It's just simple. Simple. People are too fucking like... Everything's got to be this complex mystery to make people feel better about their own thought process. They're like, I figured it out like Columbo.
Crack the conspiracy,
bro.
There's
no conspiracy to crack. It's one sentence.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't believe people fall for this shit. Put two and two together. It's not that hard. Brian Urlacher is sitting at home right now going, bullshit.
Right.
Because he knows how much he got laid in college based off of being a world-class athlete at his own school. By the way, this girl is not like a 10. And by the way, the pictures are fake. The reason Deadspin also found out is these pictures were of another girl who came out and said, no, that's me. And I've never met this guy ever. Okay? I'm sorry. And he does not fall in love with someone on Twitter. Bullshit. Complete. Sorry. I don't think, you know, domers are going to be like, oh, he's such a good guy, blah, blah, blah. Oh, go fuck yourself.
Believe that you're an idiot.
Meathead. Yeah, you're an idiot.
Yeah, I think we can safely say. If you read that.
Simple math.
Simple math.
That's
and
it.
A case to be made for more funding to our public schools.
Yeah. I'm gonna end it. That story on that because that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good one-liner for me. It made me laugh.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else laughed with you because who knows how many Notre Dame meatheads are. And by the way, I like Notre Dame. This is not about
Notre
me
Dame.
Hating Notre Dame.
I know we're Midwestern. We were for Notre
right.
Dame.
I'm for Notre Dame. I'm for separating myself from the. I root for Notre Dame, so I have to think everything's on the up and up all the time, and everyone's loyal and angels over there.
Right.
It's horseshit.
Right.
It's horseshit. Separate your heroes from fucking the sport. It's a sport.
It's a sport, and honestly, in college, especially college sports, where there are college sports being played, there's some kind of lies that's happening somewhere. All right.
Okay, so here's all I'm going to say. We'll wrap up the show if you got nothing else. Do you got anything else?
I was going to talk about my New Year's, but...
You want to talk about your New Year's?
No, me and my friend, my longtime friend, went down to... my buddy's got a place on the lake in Wisconsin. We went up there. The four of us took mushrooms and went ice fishing. And we also... we were around the campfire from about midnight to about 5:30. It was... maybe 5 degrees. We had the fire going. I think I was going to relate, but the timing is all off. I wouldn't be able to get all the bullet points in.
Oh, because
I had an epiphany. I had a mushroom. I had a tripping epiphany. We usually trip on New Year's, this group of friends.
Wait. So you go to Wisconsin, right?
Right.
And you have mushrooms. You have just mushrooms?
No. We were also popping Adderall, smoking pot, and drinking whiskey.
Okay, so where...
The Adderall was to focus, the pot was to relax, the whiskey was to keep
Explain
warm.
Explain this to a guy who hasn't drank or done drugs in years. Explain this to me like I'm a child, because it's been a long time.
Okay.
Now, I remember when I did mushrooms, but I haven't done it in years. So... what's this epiphany that you had? Go through the process for our listeners who haven't done a mushroom. How do you get to the epiphany?
Well, with psilocybin mushrooms, of which I'm a big fan, and I highly recommend if you're listening, if you consider yourself a composed person, seriously take mushrooms, people.
He
take
recommends mugs. We recommend Taste Chicago and psilocybin mushrooms
and psilocybin. Yeah. You don't really have. You can have a mean trip. It depends on how much you take. But generally, you just feel very loose and you have clear access to your thoughts. It's very personal. Everyone has a different experience. You can't kind of sum it up as something that is going to happen to everybody. But I'm out there. I step away from the campfire to the lake, which is frozen over. I step onto the lake, and this is when I'm fully – I mean, it was like 2:30. It was New Year's Eve. It's freezing out. I could hear the ice cracking underneath me. And I'm starting to panic a little bit, like I'm going to fall. But I'm still standing there, And again, I'm hearing little cracks. I don't know if it's the mushrooms or if it's the ice actually cracking. I'm going to fall in the frozen lake and die of hypothermia. Eventually, I just come to this realization that we're that essentially I'm looking and the whole world is basically like a giant frozen lake.
Yeah.
It's minor. When I describe it, it sounds minor. Because a tree in front of the lake looked like a brain. It had no leaves on it, and the ice was glittering and all that stuff. It was very nice, but it's very much not the kind of thing that is like a magic crazy trip. You have to understand. It'll be kind of a letdown when you folks at home do it. By the way, send us your mushroom stories. We will read them on the show.
We will
play them on the show, yes.
So what did you get out of this experience? Any life lessons, any life motivations?
I'm going to sound like such a pussy here, but once it's all over with, you get up and the next day and things are brighter, you just notice things more. The world comes to you more naturally.
No wonder you agreed with that feminism.
I know. Now it's all earlier. Making sense, huh?
It's all coming together now.
Oh, Matt.
All right. So here's what we learned today.
You're
Lee is
your disdain
a teddy bear.
Your disdain for my love of women.
Lee's a teddy bear. Women, bro. Yuck. Lee's a teddy bear. Marlon Wayans is the man. Go
Marlon
see
Wayans
Haunted
the
House
man.
In theaters now, especially on Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. Support the king. And then
don't
Bonnie
believe
Mayo,
everything you read.
Simple math.
Simple math.
That's
okay.
All you need to know.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this show. I will be honest with you right now. Not that I'm not always honest with you, but I'll be frank here, and you'll be Shirley. But next week, I'm not sure.
You always sum up what I say that makes no sense, and then you will go on to say something twice as ridiculous. Go on. Next week, you're not sure.
I'm not sure if we'll be doing a show because I'm filming a pilot. And if we do, we do. If we don't hold me to it. But I will for sure be back the week after, positively, absolutely.
You will return.
And please stop by Tay Chicago this weekend if you hope to meet the Matthew Aaron at 603 North Hollywood Way.
He is down for some non-sexual touching.
Non-sexual touching and Italian beefs.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get dirty. That could get dirty.
Yeah.
I just realized that.
Boy.
All right, Italian beefs and sexual touching. What am I talking
okay,
about?
Okay, yeah.
We'll see you at Tay Chicago. Thank you very much, Marlon Wayans. Go see a haunted house now. At Marlon L. Wayans on Twitter. I'll talk to you later, people. Lee?
SayNoToMugs.com.
SayNoToMugs.com. Lee Capreas, thank you as always.
Later.
This is one of your better performances.
Oh, come now.
I thought it was good.
Okay.
Okay. All right, I'll talk to you later. Actually, I'm going to talk to you right now because we live together,
but
I'm going to talk to everyone else later.
Okay.
Just so we know. Okay. I gotta go. Okay, bye
everybody.
Yeah, bye everybody.